Hi there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We are Erin from Everlearning, Haley from Taking a Kinder Path, and myself, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. We're gathering to have conversations about family life and home education, most specifically unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed education, or as I often refer to it, consent-based learning. We'll be sharing experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us. Welcome to the virtual kitchen table. Today I'm here with Erin. Hi, Erin. How are you?
Hi, Ashley. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good, thanks. We've had a nice sunny day. Actually, has it been sunny where you are too the last couple days?
Super sunny. Yeah, it's nice, right? The end of winter, it's nice to have bright days and later sun later into the day. So
yeah,
good.
Yeah, we've not been outside too much, but even just being inside with the sun coming in, I find like those days are a lot more enjoyable. So it's been really nice. And we are welcoming Cyrielle to the podcast today. Welcome, Cyrielle. Thank you so much for being with us. Cyrielle, I don't want to forget. So I do want to mention that people can find you on Instagram at Unschooling and Thriving. But thank you for being here with us today.
Ashley and Erin, thank you for having me. I'm really excited for this discussion.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, well, I already said to the two of you, I'm super excited. One, just to be back because I was sick and I missed a bit. So it's nice to be back doing this, but I'm also super excited about today's conversation and this topic. So today we're going to be talking about creativity and how it supports our well-being, how it supports our mental health. And I thought we could start, we'll spend some time, or maybe we'll even spend the whole time talking kind of about our own experiences as parents, as home ed, or for us, like unschool parents, in relation to creativity and what that has looked like for us, just whatever comes up. And then if we have time, or maybe it'll even weave through, we might end up sharing a bit about what we've noticed about our own children and their creativity in various ways, and how that's, you know, from our perspective anyway, how that has supported them in their overall well-being. And Cyrielle, we're so excited to have you here for this, because this is what you focus on. And you and I have had many conversations around this topic, and you focus on supporting unschool moms and they're, you know, taking that time to be creative. And I love how you use the term, you know, like being creative for like soul caring purposes. So it'll be really nice to have you part of the conversation. There are a few virtual kitchen table episodes. So Erin, I actually did take the time, because usually I don't think ahead, but I think this episode is going to connect to a few of our previous episodes. So we can put that, I'm sure, in the show notes, but I just thought I would mention it. Well, you pointed out, I think, two of them. So episode 6, we talked about the flow of learning. And I think that, you know, depending on how the conversation goes today, there might be some connections to that. Episode 8, which I re-listened to, and there's definitely, I was like, oh, and I'm actually embarrassed to admit, I forgot about that episode. That episode kind of escaped me. We talked about, well, we asked the question, do we deserve joy? And so the title was Unpacking Perspective of Joy in Home Education. And when I listened to that 2 days ago in preparation for today, I was like, oh my gosh, it all came back to me while I was listening. But a lot of connection, I think, with what we were talking about today, or at least what my thoughts are around the topic. And then finally, episode 12, the title is Perspectives on Self-Care for Our Children, for Ourselves. So I didn't re-listen to that one, but I think we'll probably get into self-care, or I like Cyrielle, soul care. So I think there's probably connections. If people find today's conversation interesting, they might enjoy going back to those episodes. Okay, so to get us started, I thought what I would do, I took some time to jot down some notes on what my own experience has been, you know, I was gonna, like, as an unschooled parent, but really just as a parent, and how, you know, what creativity has looked like, what role creativity has, what role it's played since becoming a parent, and I tried to think far back because it wasn't, I didn't really start thinking about the idea of parenting or home education and creativity as far as supporting myself until about maybe 2 years ago. Like it's just been the past two, maybe 3 years ago where I've started to really pay more attention to this. But when I took time to think back, like, well, what was I doing for like any creative outlet when the kids were younger? I did think of something and now it's escaped me. I mean, I think you're so, when the kids are really little and when you have babies, you're just tired a lot. And I think I probably didn't spend as much time with, you know, engaged in creative activities because I'd probably just sit down and have a drink of water or something that didn't involve a lot of energy when they were really little, because I would just be tired if I got some moments to myself. But when my kids were about 5 and like 2 or 3 years old, that's when I started my Instagram account, Storytime Shelves. And I mean, we were into picture books. I started collecting picture books as a teacher before I even had kids. So there was an interest there. And then with my kids being about 5 and 3, we were going through lots of picture books. But we had put up these shelves in both kids' bedrooms. And it was those shelves that you can like put the book so you can see the cover of the book. And I was going to the library lots with my younger one when the older one was in school at the time. And I ended up having so much fun picking out like a whole bunch of books about Christmas right before Christmas time, or love and friendship before Valentine's Day. And often there would be a theme, but not always. And then I'd come home and Avery would go down for a nap, and the youngest would go down for a nap, and I would style the bookshelves and then take a picture and then upload it on Instagram. And it just was creative for me. Like it was, I really enjoyed the process of, it didn't take a lot of time. I didn't have a lot of time. So it was like kind of like a quick creative outlet for me. And then even taking the photos and then learning how to edit the photos a little bit. I think that was probably the first time I did any kind of like photo editing. So that kind of was like the creative outlet when they were around that age for myself. And then during the pandemic, I started putting together sensory kits, so like Play-Doh sensory kits, and then I eventually did sensory rice kits. So they were just like these little kits that I'd put together for my kids, but really they were kind of not even into them all that much anymore. So I would give it to like my nieces and for gifts, like little birthday gifts and stuff. And they would have themes. So I had like a unicorn Play-Doh kit with like homemade Play-Doh and little kind of like loose parts, like gemstones. And so they could get out this Play-Doh kit, like kind of create a little unicorn world. Or I think I had a dinosaur one. I had one of a rice sensory one with like bugs. And again, for me, when I really think about why I spent time doing that, it was very like it just allowed me to be creative. And I don't think I really thought about it like that at the time, but looking back, that's what I got from it. And then more recently, and the last creativity activity I'll share, and then I'll pass it on to you too. And Cyrielle and I have talked about this, is watercolor painting. So I only started watercolor painting, I guess, just over a year ago. So it's not really been that long. And I think my kids being older, like the other, like the Storytime Shelves account and the sensory kits were kind of like easy, quick, creative activities that I could very easily be interrupted when the kids were younger. Like I could just come and go from it. Not to say I can't be interrupted when I'm watercolor painting, but I don't like to be interrupted when I'm watercolor painting. That just seems to kind of, I'd rather wait until I know I have a stretch of time where I can sit down, start, and, you know, go until I feel finished. But that's been my creative outlet for the past year. And that also is when I started paying more attention to, or maybe noticing how being engaged in watercolor painting, specifically for me, when I was doing it, like I was a few months in and I started to notice just feeling better overall. I think I used to feel like I was inconsistent with my creative hobbies. Like I would get really in. I hear other people talk about this too, right? Like they're inspired and they decide to get all the materials and they pull out all the materials and they craft or they create whatever their project is, and then they're kind of over it and they're done and they don't want to do anymore. And I've experienced that for sure. And I even experienced it with the painting, where I would have a good 5, 6 days in a row where I wanted to paint. And then all of a sudden I had a, another stretch of days of having no interest in painting. And I used to think that that was not a big problem, but I was just kind of like, well, maybe I'm not really into it. So anyway, I say all this because I noticed that at the same time I was learning about, or maybe I had just learned about, my menstrual cycle awareness, and it kind of put the pieces together for me a bit, that it's actually really, or it's not uncommon, I guess I'll say, to have days in our cycle where we do feel more creative, and we're more inspired or motivated to engage in creative activities. And there's other days in our cycle where we're less likely to. And those really stood out to me, and they were pretty consistent. And that just allowed me to feel a little bit better, knowing that I was just in my, in part of my cycle where I'm more interested in like going out and moving my body and going for a walk than sitting down painting. And knowing that those days would come back, my next cycle, I'll have another creative stretch, which was very consistent for me. Obviously, it can be different for other people. But I think having just learned about my cycle awareness and then getting into the watercolor painting, I think it actually allowed me to stay, I'm going to say like stay committed to it, although I didn't feel like, I mean, obviously I don't have to watercolor paint if I don't want to, but it just, I guess I just didn't like throw the idea out the window so quick, being like, oh, I'm not into that anymore, and just kind of forget about it and try to find something else. And after a few months of, I'll say like consistently painting for like whatever days I felt creative. So for me, it's not like a daily practice. I noticed that my like overall well-being, I just felt better. And I felt like I was just more patient with the kids. My mood was up overall. And then there was a couple months, maybe another 3 months, where I wasn't watercolor painting anymore, and I didn't feel as positive. It's kind of hard for me to explain, but it was enough of a note. Like I noticed it enough that I thought, I think it's kind of the way people talk about exercise. If they're exercising regularly, they feel better, not just right after exercising, but overall. And I found that with the creative practice with watercolor painting, that maybe I'd be having a not so great day. Like I'm not saying I'm having a hard day, I go watercolor paint and now I feel better. That has happened. And I think that's what I expected before. Kind of like how people talk about self-care and filling up your cup. Go do something that's going to fill up your cup and you'll feel better almost immediately after. That's how I thought about it. And for me, I had to realize that it's almost like honoring the needs when they come. So on the days where I have a need to be creative, taking the time, ignoring the dishes, ignoring whatever, and recognizing that if I take the time to do this while I'm having the need to be creative, it will serve me, not just today, but almost like for the rest of the month or the rest of the week. Which was yeah, I just found that really helpful. So I think that's all. I mean, that's a lot. but I hope that that kind of paints a picture of yeah, just my own experience and reflecting about how creativity has supported me. I'm sure before I became a parent too, but just in focusing on the stage of being in parenting. And then obviously I was home educating for most of that as well. So I don't know if any of that resonates with either of you, or if you want to share, how you kind of make this connection between creativity and your own well-being, but I'll pass it over to whoever wants to share.
I'm happy to share because I really resonate with what you said, Ashley. And for me, I love how you went back to rethink about before watercolor painting, because that seems more intentional than what maybe you were doing before. You didn't realize, so that was more unconscious creativity. But I love that you came back, you went back to how it was. And same as you, for me, I really noticed, I was conscious of the effect that it had. Think about, yeah, the end of 2021, I think that's when I started really looking into painting in watercolor. And I felt burnt out, I think, towards that time, because my daughter was very had high needs, and I felt like just nonstop doing things and never stopping for myself. And that's how I went into the creativity process, more intentional. I used to do crochet, but I feel like it was not really intentional to improve, just to make things for my daughter. So again, it wasn't for me specifically. It wasn't, I'm doing it for me. I'm creating something for her. So that wasn't the creativity was there, but not intentionally for me. And so the same watercolor has that. I don't know what it was about it, but it's just like you say, is that you feel these positive emotions when you are doing it. It's you're somewhere else, we talked about before, the book that I'm reading, The Craft Psychology, where she says it's a bubble of freedom, and that's how it feels, like you're kind of in your bubble, just focusing on the colors, on the brush strokes, on whatever you want to do. And it just brings you that so many positive emotions, and it kind of shadows all the negative ones, right? Kind of, they're still there, or your worries can still be there, but they're at bay. And in that moment, you're kind of focusing on that thing. And I really noticed the same. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now, because I really noticed a difference, just like you, just noticing the difference it made in my day to day, just more patience and just more happy in general. Just, yeah, that just the day to day was such a difference that, and I noticed when, like you say, if you don't do it, if you don't do that regular practice, and you can see the difference. And I think if you haven't made the practice before, I think you can't see, the difference between the two, when you're doing it and when you're not doing it. And that's when you've done it for a while that you realize actually it does have a positive impact. And that book kind of showed me the facts, kind of, the scientific facts, that it does affect your nervous system, and it's meditative, and it brings so much to your, yeah, to your overall well-being. And yeah, so I love that. And what you said about the your cycle as well, that some moments you feel more creative and you want to do more, and in other moments you don't feel like that. And she mentions in that book about there's different types of activities, and you don't want something that has a challenge when you're tired, when you need rest. And so that fact that you are wanting to do something very simple, repetitive, so the repetitivity of it is what helps, the brain kind of soothing the nervous system. And so for me, crochet is what I will do more, during my period, for example. I can just, sit on the couch, be comfy, with a blanket, and just crochet. And you can maybe watch something and do crochet at the same time, right? So it's kind of a double, I think she called it coupled activity. So you can do two things at the same time, that it's not challenging. And then other times when you have that more creative kind of inspiration, then you can sit down and do something a bit more challenging, that is a bit more technical. And so it brings you something else. Both things are beneficial, but they both bring something different, I think, to your overall well-being. So I think both are really good and needed. And as you say, I think the cycle, as women anyways, probably affects these moments when we have these different needs for creativity.
Samuel, what did you call it? Bubble of
Bubble of freedom. I can read you
freedom.
the quote, because it's, I've got it here, I've got the book.
I
And
like.
it's really interesting, because it's linked to flow. And you were talking about the episode on flow, Ashley, and I did take the time to listen to it times two, so I could listen to all of it. But because I agree, the flow is such an important part of it, I think. And you can get, there's way different ways of getting into flow, but she associates it with this. And she describes it as a state of meaningful self-forgetfulness. And then, by being fully absorbed in an activity, it is possible to create distance from everyday problems, and for a while be in a bubble of freedom. So that's what she, I mean, there's a whole paragraph on it, but it's just that flow that you were talking about in that episode of really like it's intrinsically motivated that you choose to do this, and then you're in that focus, that bubble of like doing something, and yeah, so that creates that flow. It's yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, no, I like that term, and that's exactly when you said it. I thought, yeah, that relates so much to flow, doesn't it? That space where we can just be, just in a level of engagement that's so different, feels so different. Yeah, I like how in different ways you've each talked about, you know, it can look different, like. Between both of you, you know, you were talking, Cyrielle, about how crocheting something for your daughter feels different. It's a different type of creativity than crocheting something for yourself, or maybe even choosing a different activity because in that moment, the crochet isn't fulfilling that same piece, perhaps, you know, for yourself. But then Ashley, the flip of this, which is also true, is, you know, a lot of your creativity you were finding through creating things for your children in those moments, whether you were defining it that way or not. So I like that, just how it just, you know, it's not one way or another. There's so many different ways to think about it. And Ashley, you had mentioned the pandemic, and that was for me too, maybe in a slightly different way, but I think the slowing down of not having so many external activities really made me realize. So at that time, there was my husband and I, and our two youngest were here. We're still at home. So there were the four of us and kind of like bubbled in together, right? And we got into kind of a flow. Like I started to realize just how creative everybody was. It was kind of like a parallel flow that was different because we didn't each have all these things that we needed to go out to. And so when you kind of pared that back and simplified the routine, it was just really fascinating to see how many different things, we were each creating, but kind of in our own way. And we would just sort of flow in and out. But it also got me thinking about like how we define creativity, because I think, I mean, I don't know about the two of you, but like growing up, I would often have thought of it. I think a lot of people think of it art, like they think art, like visual art, physical, like something tangible and concrete that you can do. And then I think the other way that people think about creativity is like originality. And I know for myself, I am not a very material, concrete person. So I don't do like crafts or anything like that, really. I've never really been drawn to that. My two youngest have done a lot of like woodworking and art and quilting, and so they do like to express their creativity that way. But for me, from the time I was little, it was more like a lot of it was writing. So I did a lot of poetry and I did a lot of writing. But I think a lot of the way, and I just hadn't really thought of it in these terms before, if I think about my own creativity, a lot of it is around, so in the work that I do a lot of like vision planning and life planning with people. So there's kind of like the big picture piece of that, but then there's all the troubleshooting of the little details as well. And that's kind of a different kind of creativity, isn't it? That I, you know, when I was a kid, I wouldn't have thought that that was creative. I like thought of the arts or whatever. But there's so many different ways to be creative. And I was having a conversation with my older son recently, because similar to me, he has never been interested in like fine motor stuff or crafty stuff or particularly like visual art type stuff. So I think it's interesting how we can label, I think extended family can label kids, and, you know, so I think he would not necessarily have been seen as like the creative one, but he's actually so creative. Like he's always like, first of all, he works with ideas a lot, and he's interested in other people's ideas and he builds on those, and he's very entrepreneurial. But yeah, it made me think how we can kind of label ourselves or kids as this is the creative one, or they're creative in this way, but it's so much bigger than that. Yeah, it's so much bigger than that. So anyway, yeah, I have a lot of thoughts, but that's kind of what I'm thinking about right now is just, yeah, not, it doesn't necessarily have to be something tangible. So for like, just for me, even like beginning the podcast or beginning the community is a way of just like creating more of like a big picture experience that I can hopefully invite people into rather than, something that's material or, you know, can be held, I guess.
Yeah, I love everything you just said, Erin, because that has been on my mind a lot. So I jotted it down because, yeah, how we define creativity and everything you just shared was kind of on my mind and thinking about our conversation today, too, and also thinking about my kids. And I do want to talk and get into, you know, the value of creative hobbies, like, because I think they have found, and Cyrielle, you can probably talk, speak to this more when we get to it, around like handiwork and using your, like, you already mentioned it, right? Like crocheting, the repetitive nature of crocheting and how that can help us. And there's value in, I think, like that, maybe what they would call kind of handiwork. That's not the term I'm thinking of, but really we can be creative in so many ways. And I thought the same thing about the podcast and even building a community, like there's creativity that goes into all of that. And it makes perfect sense that, you know, there's some people who would get into the flow when doing, you know, being creative in that way. And other people maybe, and I think I even was kind of maybe alluding to that when I was thinking about my cycle, and I probably wasn't clear actually, because, you know, I was kind of labeling creativity and thinking about like the watercolor painting, like creating something tangible, something you can hold. And then other parts, I mean, I would say pretty consistently, I also have a couple days every cycle where I get into like a mood to organize, which I wouldn't have thought of as a creative activity. But actually, when I organize a drawer or a closet, there's quite a bit of creativity that goes into that if you think about it. So I really like how you pointed that out, Erin, because I think you're right. And there's lots of value in being creative in lots of different ways. And then, Cyrielle, I really liked what you said, and I kind of want to come back to it, because the quote that you shared, I'm glad you brought that up, because that really stood out to me as well. And I think no matter how we're being creative, when we do get into that flow, that is what we are talking about. That's what we experience, like that bubble of freedom. And I was even talking about it with my youngest, I guess it was a couple weeks ago now. And I just noticed that he can have some days, I would say fairly often, where he's just kind of feeling a bit down, not super down in the dumps, but just kind of grumpy and not happy with the way his day's going. And I just noticed that was kind of coming up pretty often. And I checked in and we had a little conversation about, you know, how we choose to spend our time. And we talked about the joy lists that, you know, Haley inspired that idea. And we did a little bit of that, but we really did focus on what activities do you do that you think brings you joy, that fills you up, that you kind of your go-to activities. And for him, at least right now, maybe for a really long time, I guess, it's drawing. He loves to draw. And even today he usually draws with pencil markers and paper, but today he has this app on his iPad where he was creating animations. And so he's drawing, he was using his finger. He has an iPad pencil, but he likes to use his fingers. And so we just talked about how, you know, people have actually looked into this, and we've noticed that when people engage in activities that fill them up, they're often creative activities. And if you, you know, do that often enough, it can really help us feel better about our life and better about our days and just feel better. And he's the type of kid who loves to have these types of conversations. So I noticed that he's like, oh, I'm not feeling great. So, you know, off to the table he goes. And, And it just made me think, like, I don't remember ever having any conversations like that when I was a kid. So I hope, I mean, obviously we model for our kids when we do sit down and watercolor paint, or we do engage in a creative activity, but I don't want, I mean, I don't want to minimize the value of that. Modeling for the kids, as we know, is really important. However, what's interesting is I grew up with a mom who did engage in creative hobbies, very visible ones, like it would be like, "Oh, mom's crafting right now," or "mom's doing this right now." But I don't remember having any conversations around, why that was important to her or anything. So I think there is a piece like that. It's nice to kind of have those direct conversations with the kids, about, what we get out of it. So anyway, I got off track, but I did want to, when I was thinking about the quote, Cyrielle, that you shared around creating distance from everyday problems and that bubble of freedom, it made me think, and I don't know if this was maybe because of an Instagram post I read of yours or what, but it made me think a bit about how this, I don't know how to put this, but like this kind of, there's a lot of talk about self-care, and we could definitely say like, oh, when we're engaged in creative activities, that's our self-care. But I think this helps kind of answer why like self-care can't always be, a shower or getting to go grocery shopping by yourself or painting your nails, or I'm trying to think what other things would be. Those are all great. I mean, and that in the moment, I think that's what your post said actually. Like in the moment, sometimes that's all you get. Sometimes that's what you have time for and you make the most of it, and that can be really helpful. But I think real self-care is what you talk about, Cyrielle, and like it's the soul caring piece where that practice, that regular practice of being creative, it just gets a bit deeper into, because I think about the pouring from an empty cup, and sometimes I'm tired after my shower. You go in there and you wash your hair and you wash everything, and maybe you're shaving your legs and you come out and you wash your face. I'm not full of energy after that all the time. I'm actually wanting to go sit down now. So, I think if we want to talk about self-care in the way of filling our cups up so we have more energy, more calmness, more patience, we have to think about what activities can we get into that really fill our cup up, and that's more of the soul caring stuff. So, I don't think I have a specific question around that, but I don't know if we wanted to spend a little bit of time thinking a little bit more about, or maybe what, because I think, Cyrielle, another post you had, you, or no, sorry, the training that you sent me, the draft with a little bit of a list that you could maybe share of creative hobbies that tend to be a little bit more helpful for a lot of people, if you want to share that with us.
Yeah, and I really like what you both of you said, and I think there's a difference between like the creativity and then creative hobbies. And like you were saying, Erin, like you never thought as yourself as creative maybe because you were not doing like hands-on or creative hobbies, but like writing is a creative hobby because there's so many things that go on like to actually write something. And I think there's like what I'm focusing on is more crafts and like more creative hobbies because working with your hands, like it's different. Like being creative and then work, like you can be creative and not do any creative, like specific, like craft hobbies. I'll say more than creative hobbies, or like crafts or paint, but it's just different. I think they're beneficial in different ways. And it's just like I focus on craft because it's just that what I've been reading about and learning about, like how really like working with your hands and creating something, even if there's like not, even if it's unfinished, but it's just that the movement and repetition and all of that with the hands. And then so like in her book she does talk about like different types. She doesn't mention watercolor painting, but I think the list is very big, and she just probably put the things that she felt. But like hers is like more knitting, so like needlework. She talks a lot about needlework, and so knitting and crochet are like both things that she talks a lot. But like she has many other things. And I think part of it as well is that the three different, and I think I've made a post about this. It's called, let me check. Hang on. I think it's the self. So like a fulfillment of self-determination theory. And I had made a post about that, like having the three, like competence, the autonomy, and the relatedness. And I think it really goes well with unschooling because, you know, we talk about a lot of autonomy in unschooling. And I think I just loved that concept that I never heard of because it's very linked to psychology. And I really, before that, never really delved into it. But it's just that. So that's like the craft is like, do you feel competence? And that's why we're studying a little bit about like the different ways you can engage in your creative hobbies. And so you might want to do like a pattern that's a bit tricky, but you know you can do it. So like if you manage to do that thing, then you feel competent and it's kind of helps you like in your well-being. So like, and the autonomy of being able to do something by yourself, right? Like just on your own. And then the relatedness, she talks a lot about engaging socially with people. So while you do a craft. So like, or even like when you do a puzzle, like I always think about puzzles too. I feel like it's similar, like you not creating something, creating an image, but like you're still using your hands, putting the pieces together with someone else. And I do feel that it also like as and the same like the competence is there, right? Like because you can choose something a bit challenging, but not too much. So like it's kind of knowing your level and you'll engage in different types. So like the list, I can give you like a few of them if people want to like engage and create specific creative hobbies that they think could help them. And I think it's hard as well to know what you will like because like Erin, you said you were not very creative, like hands-on creativity. And I think there's so many ways, like baking, you know, can be like a creative hobby, right? Because you're doing something with your hands, but people might not think they're creative when they're baking, right? Like it's kind of, you know, separate. As you said, like creative is often the arts and maybe the crafts, but not really anything else. I'm trying to find, I think photography can be one too. Like, and I think you were mentioning, Ashley, like about creating posts on, like when you were doing the pictures and putting the books together, you know, it's something that you do have something at the end, you know, maybe it's not something you can hold it, but like it's something visual that you see, like what you've created, right? I'm just trying to find. And she does talk about as well, like having several projects at the same time. So like having ones that are very easy to go back to, and then others that are more tricky. And so again, that idea of challenge, just trying to find.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to put you
Oh,
on
it's
the
okay.
spot.
Like I had it somewhere. Oh, there it is. So talks about knitting, spoon carving, gardening as well. Like gardening is the same. Like you work with your hands, but it might not be seen as creative for some people, but it really is. You know, just deciding where you're going to put these flowers or these plants or, you know, these tomatoes, like, and putting things together, learning about the different, you know, plants that go together. There's lots of, you know, thought into it. And then she talks about building with Lego as well. I think you talked about that in the flow episode, I remember now, about building with Legos and when children are, you know, are thinking about it's the same. Like, there's so many things, building birdhouses, patchwork, sewing, metalwork, you know, doodling. And just drawing, like you say, your youngest is just the same. Like, and I love that he knows that he can get to that, and that helps him feel better. That, you know, and I think what else? Wood turning, candle making, like, you know, there's so many soap making. Like, and I love that she has that list, but I think it's just there's so much more that you can do, really. And it's just fascinating that these things, you know, can help you so much. And I feel like, and you were talking about exercise earlier. Actually, I just want to point on that because, yeah, people feel better, but I feel like often it is motivated, but there's sometimes you don't want to do it. Like it's kind of something that you feel you have to because kind of it really is talked about a lot, exercise more than creative hobbies and creativity to feel better. But I feel like engaging in a creative hobby doesn't feel as daunting, in my opinion, than having to go exercise if it's something that, you know, you have to do or you feel like you have to do. So I have that, like, I feel that there's just a little bit difference of, and she talks actually about it in a little bit, and then she touches on it and she says it's a different thing, like, because it's not intrinsically motivated. Like, I want to go and do something for myself, and it's, there's no like end goal of having, you know, maybe to be fitter or like, you know, there's always this kind of, I think, maybe hidden messages of doing exercise, for what reason you're doing exercise, you know, and society in general have, like, you know, puts a lot of focus on exercise, I feel like, more than other things.
Yeah, and not to mention, like, as you're talking, I'm just thinking, and exercising is hard work. Physically stressful on the body, and of course has positive outcomes. I think we actually talked about that in the joy episode. I think Haley talked about you know, what, how exercise is good for us, and it releases certain chemicals that makes us feel good. That's what she was saying, but there's stress involved too. So the idea of joy and stress both being there was her point around exercise. But I think that's a good point, what you're saying, Siria. Like, it is different creating something. I guess, like, I'm just thinking, like, I don't know that it would ever be described as, like, a stressful experience. And I've even heard artists talk about no longer selling their art because it took the joy out of creating. You know, it took that joy away because now it was just a different experience because, you know, whatever pressure, or it wasn't just creating for themselves, like what we were talking about earlier. And I really love the list that you shared and how, I mean, it's kind of an endless list, right? And I was writing down, because, like, gardening and cooking too, absolutely, there can be so much creativity in that. Earlier when I was thinking about it, I thought, like, and I think this is just helpful because of what we've said around some people, and maybe this stems from childhood for a lot of people where they've just considered themselves not a creative person. But I'm even thinking, like, teenagers who are really into hairstyle, like hairstyle work or makeup, that's all creative. Someone who likes to put together flower arrangements. The Lego also had me thinking about kids and adults who create and build in Minecraft. There's so much creativity in that. So there, it really, yeah, it can, because I think I'm the same thing. I often will go to kind of like arts and crafts. Or even when I was a kid, I was trying to think back, like really think back to my childhood. And I think for me, it was, I grew up dancing. Like I was always put in dance classes. So there's obviously creative expression in that. And then what I really ended up liking once I became a dance teacher myself was making up the dance routines. And that was my creative outlet for sure. But I don't No, I mean, that's still an art. So that's a little bit more obvious, I guess. But yeah, it's nice that there's lots of things for people to tap into. And I also liked how you said, Cyrielle, about how in the book, she talked about having different projects on the go. I think that makes a lot of sense, because then, you know, depending on what you have time for, what you have space for, what you're in the mood for, you can pull you know, from the few projects that you've got going on. Oh, the other one I thought about that my youngest just got into yesterday, and I was like, oh, you're being so creative, was, like I was saying, like interior design, which was me as a kid too, moving all the furniture around, putting different posters up on the wall and stuff, and getting to kind of decorate your room. So much creativity in that, right? So, okay, what was I thinking after this? Oh, I don't know if it makes sense to kind of, it's still in kind of what we're talking about now, but I was just kind of wondering about, are there other positive outcomes to regularly spending time being creative? And we've already kind of touched on some things, but I know, well, I had listened to the We Can Do Hard Things podcast, and they had Dr. Is it Martha Beck? I think that's who we said, right?
Yeah.
She was on, and she was talking about being creative and how it helps deal with anxiety. And I found that really interesting. And I kind of connected it to what you were talking about and describing, Cyrielle, around, you know, when you're watercolor painting, how you're able to just focus on the colors mixing and the brush strokes. And the way I describe it is, like, it kind of gives my mind a break from the worries. So, like you said, the worries don't go away, doesn't make the worries disappear by any means, but it lets my brain just have enough of a break, and I can get into that flow. And yeah, I mean, I think we just need that at times. And that's what I was talking about with my youngest too, when he's worried about something. And I know I don't want to I know that this is more difficult for some people, and obviously some people deal with a lot of anxiety or even depression. So I don't want to come across like, oh, just find a creative hobby and all will be well. But I was saying to my youngest that when we have our worries, like it's helpful if you can practice giving your brain a rest from thinking about it. And there's different things you can tap into and engage in to help with that. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything that came up for you guys or anything other things you noticed. Like I was even thinking like how there's art therapy programs, right? Like we do know that being creative can help with things like anxiety, but maybe there's other positive outcomes as well.
Yeah, I th there's just gosh, there's so many good things you're both saying, and I'm just trying to figure out. I'm compartmentalizing how to what I want to say. Maybe I'll, Ashley, you had said some things about. I'm gonna set the kids stuff aside for a minute, but please remind me. Please remind me if I forget. Just thinking, Cyril, when you were talking about all those different ways of being creative and the different activities. And it's so fascinating. So it got me thinking about how important a topic this is. I'm so glad we're talking about this because what it's doing for me, like when you're talking about those different sort of avenues, it makes me think about how quick we are to, I guess I mentioned this a few minutes ago too, to kind of label or put things in a certain category and then people, maybe kids in a certain category, and how it's kind of interesting to be curious about some of those because you were talking about using our hands, and I'm assuming maybe in the book some of that is when you're being creative with using your hands, there are there's brain connections happening, and so it makes me think about the fact that even though, so for somebody like myself who, maybe I'm not knitting or I'm not painting or I'm not woodworking or whatever. I think that's more about not having. So I'm still in movement a lot. So that's what it's making me think about is the fact that that can still be happening, but maybe in a way that's not connected to an outcome or a product. So for example, if I was on the telephone with somebody and was, I think this is, we're problem solving. We're trying to work through possibilities. I would be walking. I mean, I've talked about this on here before, right? I would be walking. I would often have a pen that I was fidgeting with. I might build something like or stack something, right? So if I was outside, I would stack stones or I would put them in a pattern. And even when I would play with my kids when they were little, you know how you can kind of parallel play, you're both on the floor and they're maybe engaged with something, but I would still be enjoying the blocks, but it's not necessarily toward like an end goal, but I'm stacking or, I suddenly look over and I realize I've made a different, like I've made a pattern or I've made a design, but it wasn't for the purpose of doing that. So it's more of like a meditative movement. So it's like the physical, there's like a physical level of creativity happening while I'm figuring something out sometimes. But then other times it's just almost meditative. It's like you're, but there's a level of creativity that happens in that meditative state as well. I don't have an end goal of what I'm saying here. I'm just like talking because these are things that kind of made me think about that you can be kind of in your head with your creativity. But it can, you can still be physical in the way that, so for me to sit still and it's probably why I didn't love school that much because I couldn't get very creative sitting in a desk. So I would come home after school and my family would always tease me because I had this skipping rope, but I didn't skip with it. But I would walk, I would slowly, like I would walk over it, but I would just walk in circles and I would write stories. But I didn't write them. I sometimes wrote them down. So it's just fascinating how there's all these different ways that kids do things. And so this conversation just helps me think about how open we need to be and that we can't always figure it out, We can't always figure out what our, even maybe what our own process is when we're doing things. So I don't know if that made sense for anybody else because I'm just kind of thinking it through, but
No, I think it makes a lot of sense, Erin. And actually, what you said about it kind of taking you into like a meditative state where you're thinking about stuff and processing stuff while you're doing something, and you're not really noticing that you're doing it because you're in your mind thinking. I was doing that today with Lego. We were kind of just cleaning up the kids' rooms and stuff that they're wanting to redecorate. And I've always done this when the Lego's out, is I like to sort the Lego. And it was very much that. And it wasn't, well, I mean, I was sorting, so it obviously wasn't random, but it was that I can engage in the conversation, I can be in my own mind, and I'm doing something with my hands, which I felt rather than just sitting there feeling restless, like what you said, I needed to move. And also going back to when I was a kid and the dancing, I think that was a big part of it, was I was like the movement piece to it, like moving my body. And I noticed that with my oldest kid, definitely, but both of them, I would say. My youngest does that, walking around, pacing, making stories up in his head. And he calls them movies. I just made up a movie. I just imagined a movie or a whole movie scene. But he's just been walking around and I can tell something's going on. So yeah, I think what you said made a lot of sense. You said something else. It's escaped me now, so I'll just see if you guys have anything else to add.
Well, and now that you say that, Ashley, about your youngest, so that would be like me. The stories weren't, and that's probably why I didn't usually write them down, because they were visual. Like I could see what the characters were wearing, and I could, and I mean, auditory, and like I knew what their voices sounded like. So it really was more like a show or a movie, which, But you know, when you're talking about sorting the Lego and stuff too, again, it's like breaking down this idea that that creativity is separate somehow from, like, the creativity is like just this wide open, disorganized, whatever. It separates that idea because, well, you talked about organizing a room too, or you know, sorting things and organizing can have creative value. So you can have a brain. Again, I think we're so quick to label people are right brain, they're left brain, they're this, they're that. You can be organized in a very creative way, and you can be creative in a very organized way.
Yeah, I think. Sorry, go for it.
No, go ahead. I was going to ask if we were good to move on, if there's anything else. So please go ahead.
No, I think creativity is just like, I think, yeah, like separate from creative hobbies. Like creativity is just part of life, right? And we use it in different ways. And you don't have to be doing a creative hobby to be using your creativity. And yeah, like Erin, you were not writing a physical story, but it was being created in your head. You know, it was still, but like it was there. You were creating, you know, you were being creative in an invisible way for other people, but it was very real to you, right?
And actually, it just popped in my mind now. I had thought about, I think when I originally was thinking about having this conversation on this topic, I was also thinking about creativity found in nature, or maybe we had a conversation. I can't remember now for sure. But like, Erin, I know you really like to spend time outside and like go for your walks and be kind of out in nature, and even like the birding that you do. I mean, there's obviously a lot more to that than only creativity, but I think there's so much creativity in nature that, and a lot of people, I mean, there's a lot of talk about how being out in nature is really good for us and good for our mental health and well-being. But there I think is a connection there to creativity as well, and it probably just maybe doesn't stand out as much as a creative activity, but I think that that's there's I don't know, does that make sense?
It does. I mean, and I think you hear a lot of people are so inspired by nature, right? So it's like they might be out doing that piece and that it inspires what they paint, what they write about, what they you know, whatever form that takes. I feel like nature is so inspirational. And I think it's a place where people yet people generate ideas because they're often that quiet where there's that opportunity, right? To the wheel get turning. Yeah.
Okay. Cyrielle, did you want to add something?
That just reminded me of a book.
Sorry, my phone started talking.
Did you call Siri?
Yeah, apparently.
It's my name sometimes.
Your name.
Yeah. And no, the fact that you're talking about nature reminded me that, so we've been exploring a lot in Florida and birds and a lot of things. And I always wanted to do like a travel journal, but like I always wanted it to be perfect. And we haven't talked about that actually, about like the perfectionism that might stop us from actually engaging in creative hobbies specifically, but anything creative really. And there was that book that, and I decided to get it, because I found it on eBay, and it's called Nature Journaling. And I haven't read it all, but like it's not like from start to finish, right? It's very like there's lots of things in it, lots of chapters, and it really explains how to just do nature journaling. And it, you don't have to be, you know, amazing at drawing or amazing at painting. It's just basically is looking at things, observing, being creative in that, like, you know, observing nature and just making like doodles or like anything. Just practice of putting down on paper what you see in nature, and not even doing it maybe when you're out in nature, but at home. And I've done it like for 2 weeks. I've done it like when we were like in the thick of doing lots of things and seeing birds, and I really enjoyed it. Not even painting, just drawing and just writing down like as a recording of what I did. And I really enjoyed it. And it's something that, you know, I had always wanted, but like perfectionism was stopping me. And that book really helped because she talks about anyone can do it. Anyone can just come, take their book and just, you know, jots down notes and then some sketches, anything, just to record what I've observed that day, you know.
My daughter and I had done some nature journaling for a while, Cyrielle, and I like that you mentioned, I think you were talking about not being perfectionistic, or because I think originally, you know, maybe we had this idea because I had heard of people doing this and seen pictures of people doing this, of, you know, sketching in the moment. And the problem was, it, you know, the weather where we were was not very conducive to that. And we kind of prepared for that, but it felt kind of, the first couple times we tried it, it felt kind of forced to do that in the moment. So I think similar to what you mentioned, what seemed to work better was to just enjoy the moment, take some pictures, take some video, and then set aside time when we came home, you know, with the journals that we had, to record, draw, you know, whatever we wanted to do with it. Because I do think that sometimes people can get caught up in, oh, well, this is what nature journaling looks like. You know, you take it and all the kids are enjoying, you know, sitting on the ground doing whatever, but it doesn't have to look like that. And actually by bringing the books home, or actually I think the last couple times we went, we didn't even take them with us. We just experienced it, took the pictures, and it felt for us more relaxed to just be able to get our books out at home. I think we chose to still do the drawing outside, but just at our house instead. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that you brought up perfectionism. And I'll read it. I saved a quote. I don't know who the quote is by. I don't have that here, but it goes along with it. And I screenshot it and thinking about today, but it just says, to practice any art, no matter how well or how badly, is a way to make your soul grow. And I was like, oh. Like, I have to try to remember to share that. And I think I would have forgot actually if you hadn't mentioned that idea of perfectionism. And it, I think you're so right. I've definitely experienced that. And since I've started watercolor painting, and I mention it to other people, numerous people have said, oh, I have a watercolor set, but I haven't been brave enough to open it and use it yet. And I know I've heard that about other craft hobby type, I can't think of another example, but definitely numerous people have said, oh yeah, I have a watercolor set, but I don't want to mess it up, and I don't want to, and I'm too afraid. Or like, you know, if you get decent watercolor paper, it's not super expensive. It's not affordable, but you don't want to waste it, right? You don't want to be wasteful, or you don't want to wreck it. And I was definitely that way as a kid. I was the kid who would get like the coloring book and I didn't want to mess it up at all. So if I was going to do it, I was going to take my time and I was going to make it perfect. And I think I've been thinking about that more with my own kids, like we do. And, not forgetting that creativity can look a whole bunch of different ways. So it's not always about sitting down at the table and, getting out all the craft supplies and markers and paper. But when we do the things, it's more so about the process, I guess. I say that to them, right? This is more enjoyable about the process. And I have one kid who it is very much about the process and then tosses the stuff afterwards, which I'm just like, oh, do we want to keep some of this? And they're like, nope. And I'm like, okay, great. I tuck some away for myself for safekeeping, but for the most part, it's great because we can just get rid of it. And it's all about just enjoying creating it. And my other one is very much so will. And this has changed a bit over time. One isn't as much of a sit-down kid, create with hands, with paper, pencil, and stuff. And I think a piece of that is the movement part, like what we were talking about, Erin. I think that creativity just looks different for that kid. But I think there is also, I think perfectionism for that kiddo also comes in. And not even perfectionism always, but, maybe it's a little bit of the risk taking, right? Like the taking the risk of drawing something that may not turn out the way that you're proud of or that you want other people to see. Or, just taking the risk of creating something that you're not happy with at the end, or you feel like you should already know how to make it. There's vulnerability in that as well. Okay. I don't want to move on too fast.
I just want to touch on, I mean, you were saying like
Yeah.
the children being perfectionist. And I have noticed that with my daughter as she grows, like I think she wasn't as much like that. And I think it's her personality. But like recently I did say, oh, we could do this. And she's like, no, it's going to be bad. Like and I think she'd like to know how to do these things, but it's just obviously, she's beginner, right? So, like, it's not going to look as she would like it to be. And so, because she doesn't want to be disappointed in what she creates and comparing it to me, and being like, no, so she doesn't do it at all. And so, I'm not pushing her, but like, it's, and I tell her, I just didn't start drawing, perfectly. I've been practicing often. And, the more I practice, the better we get at something, but I think it's even for us, like being perfectionists, we not do it. So I think for them, and maybe certain personalities more than others, just and maybe neurodivergence as well, like it probably is a factor too of not even engaging in it and that fear. And yeah, so I just wanted to touch on that too, like it's tricky, and I think to guide as well, like to not push them. But at the same time, you want them to express their creativity that's there, but just, kind of is dormant because of that fear of perfectionism that they have.
Yeah, and I wonder too about just growing up, like getting older. I agree with everything you said, especially the neurodivergent piece as well. But when they're really little, like if they're 2 and 3 and coloring, they're really focused on what they're doing, I think more so at those ages. That's more common. And then when they get to like 6, 7, 8, obviously be different for everyone, but just in general, you start to become more aware of not just what other people are doing and maybe comparing, but other kids, like other people might just comments and stuff, right? So I think it's connected probably. I mean, you definitely see that in school, but just in life, right? You as you get older, you become a little like less focused on just what you're doing, which is a great thing when they're so little, right? Like that's why they're constantly being creative and problem solving and exploring and experimenting because they're not thinking about any potential judgment, I guess, that might come their way. But of course, that's part of development is they will get to an age where, and they want to fit in. That's just the way it is. We want to fit in and we want people to look at what we do and go, oh, and admire that, right? And not, we avoid the negative judgment, whether that's there or we perceive it to be there or whatnot. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, almost like there's a little bit of a span of a few years there that I think it's hard because they're coming out of that lack of self-consciousness. And as they do that, they're still at an age where, because you're saying Cyrielle, like she would be seeing what you can do as an adult after years of practice, and you know, there's a gap there, for quite a while as they're developing some of those skills.
Yeah, and I think what you said, Ashley, about this self being self-conscious of other people, what they can, be saying, or like, I mean, obviously it's just us, but still, like, that maybe fear of rejection of like having people commenting in a negative way. And actually, we talked about it's slightly different, but she was yesterday we went out for some errands, and she had been dressing up, so she had like a dress. Lots of necklaces, lots of, very creative, but, and she went out, and I said, I'm happy for you to, she asked, and I was like, yeah, you can go out like that. Just people might say things. I wanted to remind her because, she can get upset also with people, like even not saying, not, they can be nice, but like sometimes she doesn't like that attention, right? And so I just told her, I don't mind at all. Like, I love that, you can dress up the way you want. And so she went that way. And some people, were like, oh, but she was able to do it, and so I was proud of her. It's product still doing it, even though there was that risk of potentially. And I said to her, some people will judge people that look different and that are creative. Like, I know you were talking about like hair and stuff. People maybe get judged if they have like very colorful hair, or like, they look different from the norm, And so I was trying to explain to her that it doesn't matter what people think, as long as you're happy with how you're dressed and, expressing your creativity the way you want. But yeah, it was like, so I feel it's a bit related to that, like, kind of, it's slightly different because it's your physical appearance, but I feel like it's a bit related to what we're talking about.
Yeah, no, I think it definitely is. It's actually making me think about my friends were actually just joking. My like mom, home ed friends were talking and joking about this just the other day about it was probably a while back now, or maybe it's been around for a long time, but kind of this messaging to parents, like when your child brings you something that they create, be careful like how you respond. Like instead of being like, oh, wow, what good job, you did so wonderful, like good for you. And instead trying to, because there's that external validation, and we want to like foster their internal motivation and whatnot. So asking, just being mindful of, I mean, I certainly don't think there's anything wrong with telling your kid that they did a good job, but I think the idea was, ask them questions about what they created and kind of being like, are you happy with it? Like, are you really proud of what you did? So that just came up for me because I think we do naturally as humans, we look for that external validation. And again, it goes back to the need and the want to fit in. And of course, as parents, we want to encourage our kids to express themselves, in whatever ways, like with their creativity, like as far as like what they're creating, but also like with their own creative expression, with how they go out into the world, we want them to. But I love what you did say about, there's a bit of like you were protecting her to by saying like reminding her, because you do know that she may not want the attention. So, also reminding her, hey, someone might comment on it. If you're good with that, then we're good. But just, so there's that piece too. But I think it's definitely connected.
It makes me think too about the term that you either coined or introduced me to, Cyrielle, which is the soul care idea, which we talk about for ourselves and we can think about for our kids. Because I was I'm at a there's a couple different libraries I'm at usually each week, and yesterday there was a little girl, and she was so creatively dressed, similar maybe to what you're talking about, like different necklaces and just all kinds of things going on. And I was thinking about how, yeah, when we allow space for that, that is soul caring, that is life giving to ourselves. And yet at the same time, to me, what you offered your daughter was just information, just sort of giving her some information about how people might perceive it if that's something that she's sensitive about. But outside of that, it's so cool to see people expressing themselves, I had mentioned my older son, similar to me, not being into kind of, you know, artistic pieces or handiwork, things like that, but creative in a different way. And I would say that like fashion and dressing are definitely a big thing for him. And you know, I think that thinking about this way, it can help us be a little bit less judgmental of ourselves, of our children, of other people. Like I know as he got into the teen years and then early adult years, just amassed a large amount of clothing. And so the kind of the conservation part of me is like, why would you need this many clothes? Why are you still getting clothes? But, you know, I probably wouldn't say that to my daughter about her art supplies. Or I wouldn't say that to one of my other sons about their photography equipment or their woodworking tools. So I think it's interesting, right? But that to me is, I mean, there are maybe less healthy reasons that you can buy lots of stuff, but I don't think that that's what it's about. I think it's like self-expression and having abundance to creatively express yourself, which feels like soul care to me. But at first we can rub up against it a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think that I love that. And I think that that's a nice way to just kind of stay open, right? To, and maybe like when I listen to you say that, it's a reminder to me to like trust our children when they're doing something that we might at first go, huh, but there's maybe a whole piece there or element that we're not seeing or getting yet or ever. And that we can just trust that there's, you know, reasons for them doing whatever they're doing. So I really like that. I do want to make sure we have time to get into thinking about one question I had in Cyrielle. I want to hear what both of you have to say about it. But one thing you kind of spend time on is how, so kind of getting back to like as parents or unschool parents, being creative, I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about how we fit this in, because we talked about, like I know I shared about how I noticed and realized that as much as I can try to fit it in regularly and on those days where I do feel creative, ignore the chores for an hour or disconnect. Not that I always disconnect from the kids to be creative, but sometimes I do. And I, you know, I make sure that they're good to do whatever they're going to do for an hour or two and I go be creative. But kind of consist, I'm struggling with words around it because I know, I guess it's because the idea of being consistent and committing to something, there's this idea that, you know, you have to do it twice a week to stay committed or to make it a habit. Like there's research and information out there about how to make things a habit. And I am kind of talking about watercolor painting for me right now specifically is a habit, but it is very much connected to me taking the time to do it on the days where I feel creative rather than being like, ooh, I got to get my second day of watercolor painting in this week. Because I don't want to give the wrong message around that. But yeah, if we want to spend a little bit of time about talking about like how we fit in it into weekly or monthly practice and why it's important. And I had questions like, do we carry around guilt when we sit down in our homes to paint or knit or write? We must ignore the housework and our to-do list and maybe disengage from the kids to an extent in order to take the time to be creative. And what have we found that's worked for us? And have there been times where this isn't realistic? I kind of just threw questions out there. And I'd love to hear what either of you have around thoughts around that.
Should I go?
Sure.
So I really like that. I think practice is a good word rather than a habit. I never thought about it as a habit, even though it kind of is. But I think habit has such, I don't know, that's is connotation a word in English?
Yeah.
Has that like connotation, I feel like maybe that it's hard to keep up, maybe. So it has that, I think, negativity associated to it. Whereas a practice, mm-hmm. I think, is more neutral, I think. And so I talk about sort of in my upcoming workshop that I'm going to do. Probably the podcast would have been released after it, but is that what you said about having guilt and to sit down and paint on it? Because obviously, I think probably all parents might have it, but as homeschooling or unschooling parents, we're at home all day, right? Like, you know, obviously, minus the times when we go out to a library or like going to a co-op or whatever, but we are at home, right? And so, yeah. So I thought my mic wasn't on. And so yeah, as just I think there's like a shift in of way of seeing things and kind of making this practice as part of our just daily life, you know, like woven into whatever we do instead of making at that time, because a habit is like kind of consistently at that time every day. And I think it'd be too, I mean, for me anyways, it'd be too much to have that kind of strict kind of structure. That's what practice is better, I think. And just basically choosing, being intentional. I think that's what matters the most, is like the intention behind why you're doing it, and then choosing and talk about creative hobbies, but it could be choosing rest or slowing down, right? And I think you talked about in maybe in the flow about productivity and like having to be productive and always doing things. So like obviously when we're doing something creative, is, you know, to nurture our soul, and it's a passion that we have, and it's, you know, I'm obviously want to spend time on that, but I also like, you know, rest and slowing down and just sitting down and drinking tea and looking out the window could be like nurturing your soul at that moment. Maybe you need that, right? And it's just, I think it's just choosing, so that like you were talking about the guilt, and maybe we feel guilty of worrying that it's, we should be with our kids or available with for them all the time. And I think they would be happy for us to do that, you know, because, you know, why not? They'd be happy to be with their parents nonstop all the time, you know. And it's just, I think it's a practice also to talk with your children and kind of sort of a boundary of like, and just expressing your own needs. And I know for me, like I didn't do that for a long time. And I think that's how I felt burnt out, is like, I actually didn't express, and I just did more and more, you know, playing and just never doing something for me. And I think it's just like communicating, and it will be hard, I think. And I think it depends on the children too. Like the neurodivergence is important, but I think any parent can do it, is just working on that window of tolerance of like, okay, there may be, it may be hard at first because they're not used to us taking our time. They're not used to us not being available, not being on call, you know, 24/7. They're used to us being there. Every time they have a request, we'll be there all the time. And it's, I think it's easy to fall into it, right? Because we want to make sure they have everything they need, because we're doing something so different from the norm. That's the worry we have of like, oh, you know, they're at school. At school, they're always doing something, right? Or like, you know, and they're at home, and I'm not providing something for them right now. And I think that's the fear that might be in lots of parents' head. And so I think like talking to them, and gradually, I think you can build that time when they're not engaged with you, and when they're not needing, when you're not needed directly. And I talk again about it, like you just find the time when you're not needed, and instead of, you have to choose, like literally make the choice of, I'm not doing the dishes, I'm doing something for me. Like it's just a choice. And like I think that's the shift that you have to do. Okay, decide I'm not going to clean that today. And as actually I say it in my workshop, but like my mom came, so my parents came for a couple of weeks, and my mom just cleaned so many things that hadn't been clean in forever, but she loves it, like because she needs to have like something really clean, shiny, tidy, and I don't. And it's just, and I told her I could be cleaning these things. She was like, oh, that doesn't take that much time, you know, like there's little things like cleaning the outside of the Instant Pot, the outside of it, right? Like all the things that for me I could be doing them, but then I'll be nonstop doing, you know, housework all the time, you know, like when I'm not with my children, my daughter. So like, is this, I told her like, I'm just choosing not to clean, you know. But so for a while it will be very, very clean in the house because she was there cleaning everything I don't choose to do, right? It's not even I don't do it. It's that it's a choice. I think this, and just the intention of, I'm going to do something that nurtures my soul, because cleaning my Instant Pot doesn't do it that. So, you know, it's...
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to
cut
you
go
off.
For it. Go for it.
I was just going to say that I think that's really helpful to recognize that it's a choice and that it's a choice that we can make. And I really liked what you said about like in being intentional. So like it's an intentional practice. That made a lot of sense. And I also I'm glad you brought up rest too, because I think that's what we're doing. We're choosing a type of rest. Like I think on the podcast we maybe talked a while ago about the different types of rest. I don't know when we would have talked about that, but I know that that's a conversation I've had at different times about the different types of rest. And one is, I think it's called creative rest. Right. But the whole idea around choosing to take that time to ignore some other things. And it got me thinking about, why is that so hard? Why is that so difficult? And then I don't want to move on too fast, so I want to hand it over to Aaron, or if you have more to add, Cyrielle, before we do. But I did have that other question around how society views productivity and versus kind of like versus the value of rest. And I know we've talked about that on the podcast before. So yeah, there's just that connection to rest and giving ourselves permission, I think. But I really like, Cyrielle, how you said, like, I'm going to refer to it, I think, from now on as like intentional practice. Because for me, I did find, and I noticed this with the watercolor painting specifically, I really got into it. And then I went, that 2, 3 months where I wasn't doing it. And I noticed I wasn't like I needed it. I needed to get back to doing it. So to me, that highlighted that I did find it a little bit difficult to stick with it. Like I wasn't choosing it enough, but I had now recognized the value in, it was really beneficial to me when I did intentionally choose to practice watercolor painting. And like learning that, realizing that for myself, like it wasn't even someone else telling me or pointing it out to me, but experiencing that myself made it a little bit easier to make that choice more often and ignore the other things. And now I view it as that is me being productive, because if I don't take this time to rest, if I don't take this time to honor those creativity needs, I'm not going to be able to do, maybe I will get the work done, whatever the chores are or the things on the to-do list, but I certainly won't do it in a very good mood. Whereas if I fill my cup up first by regularly taking that time to rest and be creative, I think I am a more productive person. I'm definitely a happier parent. So yeah.
Yeah. And what came up for me too is that sometimes it, if something feels scarce to us, so having that time to take care of ourselves, to create something, and some periods of time, there's going to be a natural scarcity. At the beginning, Ashley, you had talked about when our kids are really little, or maybe we have something else happening in our life that's just constricting our time a little bit more. But I know in times where I have felt like that creative time or that alone time is scarce, I've heard other people say this too. Like I can remember having a little bit of time home alone in the house, and I would just be like pacing, like I don't even know where to start. Like, kind of trying to figure out. It's almost like, oh, I've got this little bit of time. What am I going to do? And I think for me, sometimes that rest did need to come first. And when the kids were little, sometimes it was just, it was not putting pressure on myself to have self, like to be too defined about self-care or being creative or those kinds of things. Sometimes it just had to start literally with a nap. Like I can remember I used to carve out like Sunday afternoons I would have a nap, and then when I was rested, I could feel that enthusiasm to be creative coming up afterward. And then of course if you're coming from a scarcity perspective, you could think, oh, I've wasted, now I'm feeling creative, but I've lost some of my time because I was sleeping. So I think the need, I think it's helpful to just frame it differently too. Like we don't, there doesn't have to be a certain amount of creative time or a certain amount of contemplative time or whatever it is. Maybe that day we just need to have the nap. And there's a little nugget that comes up after we're feeling rested, and we can make a note of that or tuck that away for when we have more time, because I do think it can feel like pressure at times. And sometimes Yeah. Anyway, for me, I sometimes need to have that rest first before it comes up. But on a practical note, I wanted to say too, I think that being open and honest about that need with other people in our life who can help support that. So whether that's a spouse, whether it's grandparents or neighbors, I had a couple of homeschool mom friends that we could kind of help each other out with that a little bit in different ways, but just kind of being, articulating that need to have time to take care of ourselves or create something. And what that might mean. Like I can imagine if you were setting out watercolor paints that, and you have really little kids, you need to think about that in a different way ahead of time. Right. So just, because I know, and I think I still do it, but especially when my kids were young, I would sometimes sort of almost feel guilty for having the need, or maybe I would assume other people would just know I had that need and people don't necessarily. So I think setting that up ahead of time helps. It's like we have some partnership in being intentional and kind of holding that space a little bit for ourselves.
Yeah, I love that, Erin. And it makes me think I have, now that the kids are older, I communicate it with them. So I'll talk about, maybe they'll ask me to do something, or they'll just be like kind of taking up my attention, and it's fine. But I feel maybe I'm feeling overwhelmed, overstimulated, or maybe I've just already intentionally thought to, you know, this afternoon I'm going to spend some time watercolor painting or doing yoga or go for a walk, like whatever it is that's going to fill up my cup that day. And I will just now say to them, so they're 11 and 8, and I'll just say, trying to think about the words that I would use, but I'll just say, what's going on for me. You know, I planned on watercolor painting, and kind of talk about why I'm choosing to do that. Not just because I like it, not just because it's fun, but it's actually going to fill my cup. It's going to let me rest. I think I've even talked about the different types of rest with them before. But like you said, just communicate that, which obviously, you can start doing that with young kids too, but the older they get, I think that that helps them understand and also respect the choice that I'm making. But it maybe takes modeling a step further as well in explaining, like kind of what I was saying earlier, like I would see my mom engaged in these creative activities, and maybe she did say something about it to me and I just didn't, you know, it just went, I was like, whatever. And I forgot about it, but I don't remember her talking about it. So I think you're right in sometimes we can't assume that other people or those people around us know that this is actually kind of like filling a need, like we're meeting our own needs. So I really like that.
Men, in general, that taking that time, I feel like men probably don't feel as selfish. It's just a general idea, but that's my, you know, kind of for us, we feel like we got to do it all. And if we take that time, is like we're being selfish. Like we should be, you know, with our children nonstop. Like that's, you know, we chose to do that, you know, and but yeah, so I think that idea of being selfish, it does, you know, it came to mind when you were talking, Erin. Now I forgot. I just remembered selfish. But yeah, that's, yeah, I think, and it's just that, you're talking about modeling, I think, Ashley, too. And what do we want our children to see? Like we want them to value spending time alone, even as when they're adult, like valuing that rest is important, and kind of counter what the society is showing, is just counter what they're doing, and like showing them that actually it is important to rest, is important to care for our needs, whatever they are. And talking about that, actually, I was thinking about neurodivergence. I think when you're talking about like self-care, like taking a shower, for some people it might not even be self, like taking a shower might be hard, you know, and it's, as you say, like it takes time, and it's in terms of executive functioning, taking a shower can be really hard for some people, and it's not going to be self-care. And painting the nails, some people might love it, and it could be creative for some people, but for others, it's not at all what they like. So I think it's just, there's so many things around this, I think. But yeah, that's just what came to mind.
Mm-hmm. And when you say that too, Cyrielle, like it makes me think about how when we're modeling and maybe this has been said, but so we're modeling that our needs are important as mothers and as women, and then we're also opening the door for them to understand that for themselves. But I think that kids, I think sometimes we can, I mean, because especially when kids are little, sometimes they are really resistant, right, to us moving away and doing our own thing or spending time away from them. But I also think that over time, sometimes we can tell ourselves a story that everybody needs us and we don't have any time and we can't get away. And, you know, and I find often kids really enjoy seeing us creating things and doing our own thing and having that space. And I know Haley has told this story a couple of times around, and I think it was maybe reading, and it was her kids reminding her, like, you don't have to, you can just sit down and read. You don't have to earn, the right to sit and rest and read. And so our kids can actually be really good reminders of that as well. And I think there are times that we can identify that our kids are really needing us in that moment. And so we can defer those creative times. But I think it's still marking that in our head that it's still a need, you know, we're making a choice as a mother to move that forward a little bit until we can figure it out differently, but not just completely doing away with the fact that at some point we will need to recuperate. We will need to do something that's restorative for ourselves as well.
Yeah, I have a couple of things that came up there. One, like what you were saying, Cyrielle, around selfishness, it reminded me of, I don't know if we talked about it in the joy episode or if I thought about it while re-listening to it. But I was, this idea around when we, you know, make the choice to be creative or take time to rest as a mother, like that's a gift to us. That's a gift we can give ourselves, obviously, because it's good for us. But I was thinking, like, it is a gift to those around us, like our, especially like our family, but even our friends. You know, I can think back to like when I was a child, if I had a happier parent or a more joyful parent, because they took the time to fill their cup and they were able to do that, I would have, like, I'm not saying I didn't have that, but I can think back to being a kid and being like, that's absolutely what I always wanted. Every day I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to have happy parents. So I think, like, as a parent myself, like, if I take the time and I have figured out how to, I'm not saying be, you know, happy go lucky every day, of course, but just overall take care of myself. It's a gift to us, but it's a gift to our kids too. So for me, that's just more motivation to be selfish, I suppose. It's not really selfish, right? Mm-hmm. And then I had another thought. This was something I think you talked about in the joy episode, Erin. I hope I'm not mixing it up because I listened to one other thing as well. But you had shared, and we've kind of touched on this, but I think you had shared that you were reminded of your husband's a mantra that he had, the whole like work hard, play later, or something like that.
Work now, play later.
Work now, play later. Okay. And I wonder if I've heard work hard. I wonder if there's another one similar to that, because when I re-listened to that, I was like, oh yeah, I've heard that before, right? That idea where you get the work done and then you can enjoy yourself. And I think maybe we were talking a little bit more about being playful, right? But I think same idea here is there is this idea, or maybe there's this comfort around, okay, I'm going to rush around and get all the chores done. And I'm going to do this, do that, so that I can sit down and relax and watercolor paint. And I think some days, I think that can work fine sometimes. But for me, I would hardly ever watercolor paint. And I'd be probably too tired to pull out any of the supplies. So I think that was probably kind of a common thought process that a lot of people had for a long time. I remember my parents, especially my dad, making comments like that. And I think in the past there were probably reasons, and maybe there's certain, you know, situations where that's still the case, where it is very necessary to get work done or certain things done before, you know, you can have the opportunity or space or time to do those things. But I think, and hope for a lot of parents and unschooling moms, that It's more so, it's almost like de-schooling that a bit, that idea around that you have to do the laundry and dishes before, like you can kind of earn that time to be creative and rest and de-school, yeah, de-school your thoughts around that a little bit. So those two things kind of came up as we were just talking about that.
Well, I think that's one of those situations where it's so helpful to look at, what's our own personality, what's our own neurology around things, because for him, he would not be able to do, like, he absolutely must get this done, and then he can enjoy things and he can create. And he is a very creative person. I was talking earlier about that idea that organized and creative, he's a highly, highly organized person. And that has to happen first. And then he can, whereas for myself, sometimes I have trouble getting to the work until I can be kind of creative and do something a little bit fun. So I think, yeah, it's like just letting go of it needing to be a certain way. But yeah, there are definitely certain situations where it makes sense to get something done before you can do something else. But I think when you take that on as a life mantra, maybe for yourself it's fine. For me, it feels a bit limiting. It's felt a bit limiting. So we joke back and forth a little bit about that. But yeah.
I think that makes sense. Different people, different personalities, and then to keep that in mind with our own kids when we're trying not to judge their choices and just stay open around that they're figuring it out as they grow up, right? And it might look different as they get older. I am mindful of time, so I just wanted to I mean, we've covered a lot, but if there's anything else that kind of came up for either of you that you wanted to touch on before we do wrap things up.
I did have just a kind of a question for, I guess, Cyrielle, but also you, Ashley. And maybe I don't know that we'll get this solved in the next few minutes, but I'll just put it out there for anybody to think about. Is this the idea of creative? So, okay, you're creating something with your hands, and the difference between like freestyle and following directions. So it made me think about that when Cyril was talking about maybe something like crochet or embroidery would be something else I would think about, where you're following a pattern versus something like water. I mean, watercolor could go either way. You could be, you could go in either direction. But I was thinking about this a lot recently because I had put an Instagram post out about a Lego build that my daughter had done. And quite a few people responded to me about Lego and how much they enjoyed freestyle Lego, which I get. Like, that's absolutely. And I was thinking about how much my daughter enjoys the challenge of following a pattern and whether we think of that as creativity or not, because I think about that a lot with her art as well. She's definitely quite creative in the way that she does things, but she tends to be. She likes to understand details and realism and that challenge of creating something that feels realistic, right? Or true to a. So I just wondered, yeah, I just wondered if either of you had thoughts on that, sort of the idea of painting and seeing where it goes versus really trying to replicate something that technically might not even be your creation if there's a reference photo or a pattern that you're following.
Yeah, when you talked about that, I know I read it somewhere and I can't find it in the book, but it's yeah, the difference, and I think it also depends on people and what you're looking to get again out of the hobby. But if some people will need to have to follow the pattern because it's easier in a way to follow a pattern, right? It's like if you don't want to, if you only need to be relaxed, but it has to be a pattern that it's matching the level that you are at. And if it's too stressful, if it's too difficult, then you're not going to enjoy it and you're going to stop and not even do it and put it away. And then you won't even have any positive effects because all you will think about is the fact that you didn't get to do it because you couldn't even go through it. So I think there's that idea of it can be patterns have to match really your level. So it's not something that stops you from actually enjoying the craft. And then I think like not following a pattern and just doing, I think it depends on like, yeah, where you're at, if you're feeling more creative or, yeah, I think for me, I often follow a pattern. Like generally that's what I do, or I follow a tutorial for painting, unless I feel like if I go in nature, then I'll just see, oh, I saw that bird today. I want to draw that bird. And then I'll do that bird myself. But I often do still kind of look at what's been done, or like kind of have some inspiration online. I rarely do without any inspiration, but I guess it depends on people on that level. But I do believe that patterns might be easy for a lot of people. Above all, when you start out, I think starting having that fear of what am I going to do, like, you know, not knowing what you do, I think following a pattern in that case is really important and detrimental for the well-being, like for how it affects you. If you don't have a pattern, then you're not going to get the positive effects that you're looking for.
Yeah. I've been curious about this actually. And I think that was actually really interesting. I was cu curious what your answer would be, Cyrielle, because you with painting, you've been painting longer than me too. So, and I've wondered about personality makes sense, but I wonder too like how long you've been painting for, or if it's something else. Like I know even when I do Lego, I would much prefer follow the instructions. Like when the kids would get the Lego kits and they didn't want to put them together because they often preferred to do their own Lego things, I was like, oh, I'll build this for you. And I really enjoyed it. Same with watercolor painting. I want to follow a tutorial. And sometimes it's a really like brief, quick tutorial, like on Instagram, like it's just an Instagram reel. So it's not even like a long, really detailed, slow tutorial. But I do wonder, like, maybe if I spent more time building with Lego, or maybe down the road, if I continue watercolor painting, I could see that eventually moving away from that. Because it's kind of like I feel like I'm still learning something new in a way. And I definitely don't like it's not like I'm like, oh, I want to paint this. Like, I go to look for inspiration. Like, I want to paint, but I have no idea what I want to paint. So I go to look for the inspiration. And then because I see it and I want to paint that, I want some instruction. So that's been my experience with those. And then I'm not super into photography, but I've always enjoyed taking pictures. And that's an example of something where I've never, you know, studied photography in any kind of way or read up on, you know, how to improve my photography skills. So that's something, but I've been taking pictures since I mean, I got my first camera when I was before I was a teenager. So I've been doing it for a long time. And back then, I mean, I guess there would have been photography books I could have got, but for the most part, I just played with it. Like I learned through playing. And then the other thing, as far as creativity goes, is like I mentioned earlier, I grew up dancing. So coming up with my own choreography, I don't really do it now unless I'm playing around with the kids. But that was another thing where I just grew up dancing for years and getting the instruction and being taught, you know, other people's dance routines that they made up, that it was a pretty, felt like a pretty natural, easy progression to go into like making up my own dance routines and found choreography really a good creative outlet where I wanted to do my own. So I've been curious about, you know, like how long someone's been practicing whatever the creative hobby is, if that's kind of, I'm sure there's some people, you know, their personality, they maybe always stick with like a pattern or a tutorial, and I'm sure it makes a difference on the different hobbies as well. But yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's interesting because, you know, when you're talking about painting and looking for something, so it's like you are motivated to do the particular medium and you're looking for what. And I think for me, it's the opposite. I get very inspired with ideas and I'm like, how the heck am I going to express this? Do you know what I mean? So it's coming from the op. I have to figure out what my path is going to be to express what I'm inspired about. So that is super, yeah, that's super interesting. Thank you.
No, I was curious about that too, so I'm glad you asked. Okay, again, I am mindful of time, but I don't if I want to give both of you a chance if there's anything else you want to share or if we're good. Cyrielle, if there's anything else that you wanted to mention or touch on that we didn't get to in the conversation. And if not, that's okay.
I did write down something and then we didn't, and then we moved on. So I don't know if I should go back to it or maybe not, like, because we moved on from it.
Totally up to you.
Oh, I'm
yeah.
I think this one you were talking about, we were talking about selfish and like the how you're seen of like taking that time. And I was thinking about, it made me think also like of maybe that idea of looking like we're lazy, and maybe depending on our partner's idea of things as well. Like, I don't know, you know, if you're supported by your partner, or if your partner expects to come back. I mean, I'm making like assumptions that most of the time it's the mom staying at the unschooling mom staying at home, and then the partner or the dad working and coming home. But like having discussion with your partner in what they expect to come back home to, and maybe the expectations they have and might not be like what you want to do, or like, yeah. So like, I don't know if I'm clear, but just like the expectations versus the reality of what it is to be at home all day with children, you know, like, so I think there's a discussion also to have. We talked about having, you know, talking with the children, but I think you touched on it, Erin, talking about, you know, people in your life, about expressing your needs. But I think just touching on, I think having a conversation with your partner about, it's not because you're at home that you're a housewife or whatever, like just expecting to clean, you have children with you, it's different. Like, because there's moms who stay at home, but the children are at school, and it's a whole other, it's different, right? Like, it's not the same. So I just wanted to just to put that there, because that came to mind when we were talking about it, and I think it's important too.
Yeah, I think that's a super important point, because just because you are in a role, or you choose to be in a role, having that communication about what your needs are around expressing yourself and having that time. And I think that the flip of that can happen too. I've heard people say that people make assumptions that because they're home full time with the kids, that they aren't finding any inspiration. And maybe part of their creativity is what Ashley was talking about, creating, you know, curating different things with the kids. But yeah, that idea of expectations is so, because we don't talk, maybe it's this work first, play later problem. We don't talk about creative outlets and creativity. And so having that communication about what each person needs, and then maybe the person who's potentially away and commuting, when are they getting their time to be creative? And everybody's just better if they're having those outlets. Yeah, I love
it. Yeah. Yeah, I like how you just said everybody's just better, because that's the way I keep looking here. Everybody's just better. It is better for everyone. And yeah, no, that's a really important one. And because we talked about the feeling of self and feeling selfish, but this idea of, yeah, being seen or judged or perceived as lazy, right? I think that's, when you said that, I was like, oh yeah, how did we not talk about that? And my husband's supportive. Like, he is supportive. Yet there's definitely been times where, when I know he's about to come in the door from work, I'm like, what am I, you know, I start, I get up from reading my book, or I pack up the watercolor paints almost without thinking about it, almost like, oh, I better get back to doing stuff. Like, maybe it's a bit of a time marker thing too, you know, how much time has gone past and whatnot. But I think that goes back to, yeah, that idea of you work, you get everything that needs to be done, all the responsibilities taken care of, and then you take care of yourself. You know, so even if it's taking care of yourself, that comes second. So I think that that's a really good thing that you brought up, because they're, like I said, my husband's supportive, yet I still have that pop in my mind, and I still kind of have that, you know, feeling, and I'm self-conscious about that when he comes in the door. What does it look like I'm doing? And I think it also depends on the mood that I'm in. There's certainly times where I'm like, I don't, whatever, it does not matter. But it made me think something else, and I feel like it's, there's something you said, Erin, and I wanted to, it made me think of something. It has escaped me. This has happened to me multiple times. So,
yeah. Well, and I, I have more stuff, so I think we might just have to have another conversation because I have some thoughts. I mean, there's lots I think we could talk about around kids and stuff too, right? So,
Yes, for sure.
but yeah, I had thoughts about something I'd read about combinational creativity and the concept of originality or not. So let's come back at some point.
A
And
part two. That
yeah,
would be
might
great.
delay a little bit, but.
Yeah, no, that would be great. Cyrielle, thank you so much for joining us. I had mentioned I know people can find you on Instagram at Unschooling and Thriving, but is there anything else that you wanted to mention while you're here?
They can also go to my website unschoolingandthriving.com, and there's a few free resources on there, and there's also the 12 Days of Soul Caring series, which is still there and you both participated in. So yeah, it's still there, so if they want to have like a look around of what's available. And my workshop, that will be next week, but I don't know if it probably will still be available on my website, when this episode comes out, and also the community that I'm releasing following that linked to Creative Hobbies, so they can have all the information on my website.
Oh, thanks. Good to see both of you.
Thanks, Ashley. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and maybe helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Haley can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. Erin can be found at Everlearning. And I, Ashley, can be found on Instagram at AshleyAsMama and at Storytime Shelves. We'd be very grateful if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might appreciate it. Thank you for your time today.